Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? Espero que todo vaya bien.
Welcome, everybody. Today's episode is with Ming Chan, and it was pretty interesting because we sort of talked about what being a digital executive is like in today's digital world, right? Today's very globalized and digital world. And then we talked about how he personally grew up in between cultures, because he's someone that has three offices right now in, you know, different locations and different continents, but he also had a personal experience growing up amongst and in between different cultures. And so it was interesting how that influenced his life today. And so we talked about that and why there's a lack of representation in today's media. So I think this is going to be interesting for people that are sort of looking to sort of build careers in the digital space. And if you're one of those people, he definitely made sure to leave his contact information there. So stay tuned. He's a very renowned professional in the field and has been awarded with many accolades. So if this is a career you're looking to head into, enjoy.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Ming Chan. Ming is the CEO of The First Movement. Ming was named one of the top 10 Asian entrepreneurs in America by Inc. magazine and has led agency to three offices worldwide. So this guy is really someone that doesn't just do stuff here in America. He does stuff on a global level. He's recognized as one of the top digital, his agency is recognized as one of the top digital agencies in the world by the Society of Digital Agencies, which is a very reputable organization. And as a Silicon Valley software engineer by trade, Ming was also the recipient of the prestigious Primetime Emmy Award in Technical Excellence in Interactive TV. This is going to be fun. I love when people are multidimensional. Welcome to the show, Ming. I'm really, really excited to dive into your background with entrepreneurship, with media, with digital experiences. But, buddy, how does it feel to be an Emmy Award recipient?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, and I'm glad to be here sharing some of my experience and insight. But yeah, to answer your questions, yeah, it's a little bit surreal. Obviously, I won that quite a while ago, but at the same time, when I got nominated, or at least our project got nominated, I didn't even know there was such things called the Primetime Emmy Award. And it's great that even, you know, Emmy Award, most people know that as a TV media award, right? But they actually create a separate award specifically for technical excellence and digital, specifically. So obviously being that part of, roster that actually got the award, it was a huge honor. It's definitely one of my highlights of my career for sure.
Yeah. No, I congrats on that. That's a big deal. So take us back to the beginning for you. When did you know that you wanted to be involved with, you know, with engineering, with digital experiences, and what was the turning point in your life that led you here?
Yeah, I don't know about you, but for me, I growing up in Hong Kong, I had no idea what I wanted to be or who I am, who I was even. especially for those who are not familiar with Hong Kong or even the culture or the society of Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a very small city. I grew up in a super small city, especially in a Chinese, kind of British Chinese environment. We were told, at least we were taught, the education system is very different than here in America. So what we was told was very focused on kind of what I call the left brain development. So very analytics, very math focused, very science focused. So as you can imagine, it's very much about theories and this is the way to do things. So for me to, there wasn't a specific moment in time that I realized until I came here in high school, until I went through a series of career changes of meeting different type of culture or people, that I realized, hey, wait, what I was taught or what I was told I should be, maybe a lawyer and doctor, make money, might not be the right purpose in my life. So I wouldn't say there was a specific defined moment that propelled me to who I was today, but it's a series of experience and obviously different exposure, different culture and values in my life when I moved to America that changed me over time.
Wow, wow. And I want you to dive into that. So when you came here for high school, what was it like for you to be so different? You know, what did you do to connect and how did you feel internally?
So we were part of the phenomenon that called parachute kids. It's actually a pretty interesting term, but the whole idea is that was back in the late 90s. So obviously, as a small city or even country in Hong Kong, China, there was a lot of desire for sending kids for better education to the Western culture. So Australia, England, US, of course. So we were part of what we call parachute kids just because we were just basically came here by ourselves in boarding school, etc. So for me, that experience was traumatic, to say the least, I guess. I was 14 years old and I was just basically, my parents said that, okay, now because you weren't doing too good at school in Hong Kong, you have to come here and try to make it yourself. When I came here, obviously it's a big culture shock, in terms of not only the different language, first of all, but also the people, the diversity, versus in Hong Kong, obviously I was surrounded by only Chinese. And while I went to boarding school, there was still a bunch of us who were considered the parachute kids. So we kind of stuck together, but obviously eventually I realized, hey, this is America. We are in America. So I better kind of start exposing to at least put myself into a situation that maybe I should learn a little bit about how America works. So that experience was traumatic, but at the same time, I wouldn't change a bit of it because that is a key defining moment of, I guess, starting to find myself. Yeah. And who I stand for. So, yeah.
No, that's so important because a lot of the listeners on the show, they identify with several cultures. And I, you know, I so relate to the idea of you thinking that you have to be a lawyer, engineer, or doctor just because it's drummed in you. You know, as a Nigerian, that's a very popular thing for people to say that as well. And I've noticed that as well in Asian culture. So,
yeah.
So then you start to find yourself, you're like, okay, you've reached a point where you're like, let me just make an effort to make more of an effort to really connect more with the American culture. And it looks like some of that was learning the language and then learning some of the things that make, I guess, America. What were the things that you did? What were the things that you found that you saw connected you to more American?
Yeah, it's funny, like when you talk about culture, and I'm a big foodie, so
yeah.
So when you talk about like culture, it's funny, food is one thing that you can connect to people very quickly. And I think when I was in boarding school, obviously I got exposed to different type of food, you know, so-called American food, right? And it was a big drastic change from kind of my diet, coming from even in Hong Kong. But at the same time, there was as I realized, food and even going out with friends, sharing a meal is a great tool, I guess, a venue to actually get to know each other and find common things. So very, very kind of, I guess, unexpectedly, that's how I started connecting with people, because I realized that, hey, I want to try this food. Can you take me to this type of food? And most people are actually, whoa, you're asking about food. Let me take you to the best food I know. So that really triggered that bonding that I had with all these different friends from different backgrounds, etc. So that was kind of the first step for me to start learning the culture. And obviously through friendships and talks, etc., it's hard to learn the language. And after all, and I'm sure you know too, and most of your listeners will know, and we are all not that different after all. Once you kind of peel off the superficial layer of color or where you're from, etc., we're driven by the same thing. We might have slightly different values, but we have the same value that we look forward to, right? Like the integrity, honesty, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So I think I started realizing that, hey, you know what? We might look different. We're not so different after all. And I think, again, going back to food being that ingredient that ties us together. So that was one of my first steps of starting to get into the American culture, or starting to get acquainted of the American culture.
Yeah, no, I love that. What you just described is something I always tell people that travel to do, is to find your connectors. You know, for me, it was sport. It was food for you. For me, it was sports, sports geography and pop culture. So I consume a lot of pop culture. So I know a lot of, like, oh, that was the actor from there. That's the game from that, or that's that. And then with sports like food, like you said, I mean, I think food, sports, and music are, you know, the things.
Universal.
That, yeah, exactly. They're universal. Yeah. Exactly. I love that. So now we come to today. Mr. Emmy Award winner, CEO First Movement, digital agency that has 3 offices worldwide. You've been recognized, your agency has been recognized as one of the top digital agencies in the world. What is your goal? What do you do right now, and why do you feel like you do it?
That's a great question. And I think, let me start by saying that I never, and I'm sure you do too, it was really finding my place in the world and my purpose. And having a business and running a business is just happened to be something that fell on my lap in some sense. As I go through, and this might tie back to your questions about goals as well too. At the end of the day, for me, I've had a pretty good career in Silicon Valley, known some great people, did some great work. So my name or my personal brand was out there a little bit. So I had opportunity, and I had different opportunities that were presented to me. And for the longest time, I was just trying different things, right? And it fell into, it's really starting a business or even running a business. Of course, money is important in some sense, but it's not why I started the business. I truly enjoy what I love to do. And the fact that, especially within digital, it is the present and especially the future. And it is, to use your words, it is another connector, right? Mm. We are all connected by digital. So in some sense, being in the digital business is another way for me to connect to more people and really find my place in life in some sense, and my purpose. So to your point, the goal of the business, right, is very much aligned, in my opinion, of what I want to be as a person. And at the end of the day, we run a digital agency creating digital experience that hopefully will change people's behavior. And maybe in the most minute way, right, we build a tools or products or something that would actually change people's life. And that's kind of why we all believe, at least who work here at the First Movement, that's why we wake up every day to go to work, right? So to that point, the goal is really, I think I can name you goals in terms of, oh, I want to make X million of dollars, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, what we truly want to do is we want to wake up doing what we love to do. And, you know, it's been 11 years that I've been running this, and I can safely say that I'm still waking up loving what I do. And that's all, at the end of the day, I think that's all it matters to me. And again, using this as an opportunity to connect with more people, learn more from other people, and again, contribute to the world, hopefully, in the most minute way, right?
Oh, my goodness. That is so good. Waking up doing what you love. Waking up doing what you love. That's one of the most overlooked things that we do. Are you working where you love? Are you doing what you love? And I'm glad that you found that. So you mentioned digital experience there. What makes a good digital experience? 2008.
Yeah, and then I think in 2018 and with the explosion of different technology and hardware and software and all these stuff, there's always going to be new things. For me, it's all rooted down to, is a digital experience actually changing people's behavior in a better way? Or even helping people to do things better or faster and more effectively, right? If you think about most of the kind of innovations or great digital experience in the past decade, is, you know, starting from the internet to the iPhone to obviously now you have the AR and VR, augmented reality stuff. There's a lot of gimmicks, a lot of, you know, flashy stuff people just look at and say, whoa, that's cool. And that's cool. But at the end of the day, you know, can some of these change life, right? So one of the things that we've been looking at is we work with a lot of healthcare clients and tech clients. And of course, you can look at, I work on this so-and-so, this movie, and I create this digital experience, which is, well, very cool. I can meme myself, etc., which is fun. But what at least we are more drawn to, especially in the healthcare and the technology field, it's really digital can actually change life for the better. If you imagine that nowadays, and this is not new, how people actually get diagnosed of certain diseases or cure certain diseases, there's a lot of digital technology or digital experience that goes into that as well too. So for us to be a part of that, at least help some of those clients to create these experience, that's not only make you feel good, right? But it actually change people's life for the better. That to us, right, is what makes a great digital experience, right?
Yeah, the ability to change lives through story, allowing people to experience something different. Do you participate in the Super Bowl commercials?
We don't. It's funny that we just had an article. We just got interviewed by MediaPost, actually, talking about the Super Bowl. We don't participate in that. I used to run an agency. I used to work at one of the big 4A advertising agency. So we still participate in terms of watching and really analyzing what the advertising and stuff like that. But in terms of actually doing work for the Super Bowl, no, we don't.
Oh, yeah, I've always wondered. I don't know. I mean, I'm not in the ad world, but is there
Sure.
Why do companies do that? Because it's like $5 to $6 million.
Yeah, you're right.
Is it worth it? I don't know. I obviously I'm not in the world, so, but I'm curious as someone there. I know it's like the biggest sporting event in terms of views. So
yeah.
I wonder, in your experience, is it ever worth it in terms of return of investment, return on investment rather?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of obviously value in terms of Super Bowl, right? You're talking about, you're right. A Super Bowl ad average, last I checked, ad average about $5.2 million. So the whole idea of you're supposed to be able to reach about 160 million people, right?
Yeah.
Because that's how many people actually watch the Super Bowl. So if you're talking about return on investment, yes, $5.2 million, then you reach about 110 million people, right? That's about one third of the actual, in America, at least the stats says that you have target audience of about 300 and something million, right? So you reach about one third. $5.2 million, here's comparison, right? $5.2 million can buy you 32 years of mobile video ads. It can buy you 33 social games. And you can reach like about 2 million people more on Facebook.
Wow.
And last but not least, this is the funny one. And I'm sure one of those big things is about celebrity and what we call influential ad, right? Selena Gomez, for example, she has 175 million people, right? And she, each, if you ask her to post something for you, like sponsored, it costs her about 600 grand each. So basically, you can get 8 posts using that money from Selena Gomez, and you can reach easily over 200 million people already. So with that said, right, all that says, obviously, if you look at all the stats, yes, 5.2 million Super Bowl ads can buy you a lot more value in digital media. But at the end of the day, right, you know, there are still brands, big brands doing it. I know Pepsi kind of pulled out and they went back in. So there is still value in terms of being in the biggest sports event, you know, arguably in America, every single year, right? That exposure, that people talking about you, you know, that is something to be said, right? So again, I'm not here to judge whether should buy a Super Bowl or not, but if you look at the pure stats, right, you know, $5.2 million is a lot of money, especially in digital.
No, thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. I didn't know. And I'm looking at your approach, right, with your company. So what, a lot of what you do is, you say you make great work with the people you work for. So you're, but you're designed for startup and you optimize for, you optimize over years for enterprises. So you work with startups as well as enterprises. And what does someone get from working with you? What is the expectation that they have when they work with your brand?
Yeah. I think the number one thing that we get is a slightly different approach than maybe most agencies, especially because I came from a technical background. And our belief that when you work in digital experiences, you're right, and you mentioned it, it's about telling a story. But at the same time, it's actually building what we call building something that is, that lasts, right? Scalable and repeatable and actually change people's lives in some sense. So when we look at that, every digital experience, and you can even refer that as almost.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The product. A website is product. A campaign is a product. So I think our approach, looking at things more long-term wise, instead of, for example, going to Super Bowl, right? You're not just building something just for the Super Bowl. What we want, when you work with us, what we try to instill in this process and even culture in some sense is that when you work with us, we are here to build you something that lasts, something that can change life over time and something that can add value for you and your business over time. So I think our processes, our people and how we work and what we build is all, surrounded by that single idea of building something that is scalable and repeatable and almost like a product.
Yeah, that's good. Repeatable, scalable, and always a good product. And if people want to reach out to you, where can they go? Just before we move away from the business side, I want people to really know how they can connect
with you. So the first movement is THE1STmovement.com.
Okay.
You can learn about us and also there's contact info there as well too.
Yeah, and I'm definitely going to put that in the show notes, the first movement. So, you know, THE1ST movement.com. What I want to talk to you about now is, you know, the fact that we live in this interesting time, digitalization, globalization of the world. You know, when I started this podcast, I wanted to bridge those gaps. I was saying, why is it that we live in the most globalized time ever, and we are in the most digitalized time ever, but people aren't connected? And with your background, you know, you're from Hong Kong, you've come to America, you've made a living here, you have businesses in different parts of the world. What do you feel like is the problem with people finding ways to represent the world the way it is? Why is it that when we turn on movies, we don't see enough of people of color, or we don't see the world as is? We only see a certain amount of people. Why do you feel like there is that disconnect?
That's a great question, and I'm sure, obviously, with your background and your experience, you might have even better insight than I do. But at least in my very kind of narrow point of view, you know, you can talk about media being the good guy or the bad guy. At the end of the day, I think it's digital, right? It creates a huge opportunity, but also, especially with digital, you can reach a lot more people quicker and faster. But there is something to be said about digital being way noisier and less regulation in some sense. Mm-hmm. So obviously I'm not going to get into the politics about, like, you know, which one is fake, which one is real, etc. But obviously there is a challenge here. There is a problem here, that within digital, that because anyone can post anything, the reality of that is how much truth are out there. It becomes very noisy. Versus if you're talking about media, etc., at least there is some perception, right, that it's truth. So I think the problem that we also see in terms of going back to your child job, of course, there are a lot of talent, a lot of bright mind with different colors out there, right? But at the end of the day, I think it's the channel and how focus you can be in terms of finding the right channel to broadcast your own message. And obviously for you, you have found your channel in terms of this podcast, etc. But I think because of noise and the different options, almost way too many options, mm-hmm. I've met so many people, I'm sure to you too, right, that have bright ideas, something really strong to say, but the digital has become way too noisy for them to stand out. So that they, while they have great things to say, they don't know where to say it or how to say it. Versus, you know, the old days of without digital, right? It's a lot less channels, which is a problem, but at the same time, it becomes a lot more focused so that people know where to go. Now is, where do you go? Do you go to Instagram? Do you go to Snapchat? Do you go to Twitter? Do you go to podcasts? Mm. Or where do you go? That effort of actually speaking out something is a lot greater, but at the same time, and I'm sure you see that, right? Nowadays, with minorities or colors, etc., the world has become, to your point, using the word globalized. Everyone has a lot to say, and there are bright minds, there are brilliant minds out there, and I think it's just, unfortunately, there hasn't been they might not have enough help, to shout or broadcast their brilliant ideas, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, those are all good points. And, you know, I've always wondered that too, which is, you know, when you were saying that we have the many different options, I was thinking about ways to sort of break through to mainstream media and sort of disrupt the stories. Because I feel like a lot of, you know, our brains work in stories. We think in stories. We process many things in stories, and I also felt like a lot of stories were being false. The stories being told about Africans and Asians and a lot of Latinos were false, or incomplete is the right word there. And I wanted to know the best way to disrupt that, and I think what you're saying is true. I found that finding a way to own your narrative and sort of just using the other mediums, whether it's YouTube, whether it's a podcast, whether it's your own Instagram, was an interesting way to build a community of people who haven't felt represented in so long. And that if you do that well enough, you then you then almost make this business case for all these established organizations to say, oh my goodness, I've been missing out by not really reaching out to you. So it's almost this weird thing. It's frustrating on one end that you have to almost do that to prove yourself when maybe other people might not have to, but it's also rewarding in the sense that because you've created and focused on your community, you really have the trust of that community, and they can, you know, decide and make decisions with you, or they can even inform your next decision. So,
yeah, and I think you brought up a very great point. I wanted to, obviously, I want to listen and not to miss that too. I think you brought up a couple points that repeated a couple of things, but I absolutely wholeheartedly agree. It's, you mentioned about own your narrative, and you talked about story, right? And I'm sure you know too, like, especially with minority or not even that, but English as a second language, it's a tough thing for a lot of people, because obviously, especially you're right, people are drawn to stories. So the way how you tell your story makes all the difference. So especially English as a second language, there's a lot of anxiety or anxiousness or even don't trust your ability to tell a great story because English is not your first language, right? I think there's a lot of people have brilliant minds, but they just can't tell what they want to say. In to use your words, own their own narratives. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much about the channels, because at the end of the day, right, I believe if you have something really compelling and interesting to say, doesn't matter what channel, it will come up, right? Mm-hmm. I think the challenge, especially, and this is interesting, and as because we do a lot of work with millennials, with this generation, if you imagine, and my generation at least, you know, texting, or even on your cell phone all the time, isn't a common norm. So how do you meet people? You have to go and actually talk to people right now. So through talking to people and actually conversing, maybe you will learn the soft skill of actually how to tell a great story. And I think now this generation, you know, if you think about all the texting, the LOL and the short code, etc., right? All those stories, the way of telling stories is very different nowadays when at least when I was telling stories. So I think that present a challenge for even millennials to put themselves in a different environment to tell stories, right? So that to me is also, I find it fascinating, especially in the work that we do. In terms of telling story, right? Especially the generation, they definitely tell a story slightly differently than maybe how I would have told story back in my days.
No, I love that you said that. So I'm a millennial, so I like to listen to people from different generations when they talk about social media and connecting, because it's interesting. I always say I'm not on the side that thinks social media is bad. I actually love social media because I think it's great. I think it's got its good and its bad, but I think a lot of times we don't focus on the good. But I think we always forget, a lot of us in the world, all generations, sometimes we forget the social in social media. So it's a great way to meet someone online, but I always think there's also another way to even get to meet the person in, you know, in real life. If you get the opportunity, hey, I'm in LA. Hey, Ming, we did a podcast 2 months ago. Do you want to grab lunch? That's an example, right? So I think there are ways where we can actually amplify that. And I think the more we do that, and we're starting to see, I mean, that's how Netflix came about, right? Now Netflix does movies, Netflix, you know, TV shows. Olden days, you would never have said that, you know, things like that could be disruptive, right? Because I think ideas are formed when people disrupt things using the right digital platforms and telling the right stories. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, we're getting ready to wrap up here, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on a few things. So obviously someone like you who's built traction and members in your community and in your group, I'm curious to know, with all the distraction in the world today, how do you feel like people can actually build a movement? You know, how can people start? What are the first steps in starting a movement with your story, with your message?
That's funny. I saw, I think, I don't know if you intentionally did that, but you know, The First Movement. That's exactly the name.
I mean, I would like to think that it just happened accidentally.
I know, exactly. That's funny. But yeah, exactly. That's actually the name, The First Movement. It's actually represent exactly what you talked about, right? It's really, at least when I started, I believe that, obviously 11 years ago, digital or experience shouldn't be the way it was. It shouldn't be about, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it shouldn't be about Cindy Crawford, you know, dressing in a bikini and tell you to drink Pepsi and you're like, okay, I would drink Pepsi. That shouldn't be the way advertising should be. And hence, that's why I believe that digital experience is supposed to be building something more meaningful. And the way we do it is very differently. And that's why, you know, the First Movement was started. And it was really about disruption, at least in my opinion, about disrupting the way that how we build digital experience and how we build products as well, too. So that's funny that you mentioned that. So going back to your question, so I apologize, can you repeat? So you're talking about, let me clarify, I understand exactly what you're asking. So you're talking about like how does someone actually
start
able to start a movement?
Start a movement with your story, your message. Yeah. What are those first steps involved?
Yeah, and I think we've said that even in the beginning of this call, right? It's really about find your narrative first, and to your point, right? And then to steal your words. Not only find your narrative, but find something that you strongly believe in. And I think this is where the hardest thing, right? Especially with all the noise and stuff like that out there, there's so many influences about your opinions. But I think if you look at any movement or any disruption, start with a single, strong, non-movable idea, right? Or belief. So I think it's about that, right? It is, and as you know, it's not an easy thing to, it's never an easy thing to start anything. Rightfully so, to build something into a movement, right? But I think it's that belief that you have to be so strongly held to. No matter what happened, I'm going to believe this, right? The arrogance and that decisiveness that you have, that's the first thing I would say, right? I think what you will see is, if you think about all the disruption and all the movement, if you believe it strong enough, someone will believe you. And going back to the point of there's something called, I don't know if you, maybe your listener have too, there's something called a tipping point, one of the great New York bestseller. Any movement, right, the tipping point basically says any movement is kind of like a hockey stick. But in order to get to this tipping point, you need a couple roles of people. One of the key roles is what we call mavens. And I truly believe that, right? You have a single strong idea, but you also need people that are willing to shout it and spread it for you. And that's the idea of mavens. The mavens, and interestingly, millennials, the definition of mavens is someone who seek knowledge, but they also love to share the knowledge, right? Without anything taking back. It's just the fact that they like to share what they learn. So the whole idea is obviously to drive the movement, you have to start shouting, or at least broadcasting, what you strongly believe in. If you can get aligned a couple of mavens as your key members of the community, what we have seen in even in recent history, that's how movements get started. So with that said, right, I think my couple maybe advice and recommendation would be find something that you truly believe in, to use your words again, refine that narrative, and then find those mavens, right? I have been very fortunate to find my mavens are the people that work with or for me, because they believe in what I believe in. And together, right, then we can influence other people. So to me, that's the number one key of actually starting and getting some momentum in any movement in some sense.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. Find your mavens. Yeah. That's it. You know, the thing with movements is that a lot of times your first few followers are the ones that can actually amplify the movement. And I think a lot of times people think they don't have 20 million people, that's it, they're done. But if you really focus on the first few people that really buy into your mission, your value, that is what is going to get them to go around and start to spread your message more, because you've really provided value for them. And so...
Yeah, and I think that going back to your point about social, right, there's a lot of... a lot of funny stats out there or right around that says, oh my God, you have 200 million followers. But what's more important once you get to that point is how many active Mavens users do you actually have out of those 200 million people, right? So I think that's the, to your point, to even echo what you just said, right? Yes, yeah. Absolutely. If the volume of the community is important, but it's the first few, what we call loyal, your brand advocates, right?
Yeah.
Those are your loyal mavens. They have the power to help spread your message out a lot quicker than you would have by yourself.
That's great. That's, I love it. I love it. Ah, oh, goodness. This is amazing. I love this, Ming. No wonder you're so successful with this. How can people reach out to you? How can people reach out to you in case they're, and what type of clients do you like to work with?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. I have a Twitter, Ming at T1M. I'm also on obviously LinkedIn under Ming Chan. And of course, and you can also reach me at Ming@thefirstroom.com. So those would be the best way to reach me. Yeah, and I love to, like I said, I personally are involved with the Asian communities. Just give back a little bit. I've been fortunate to have some success. Also work with brands and as well as startups as well too. And I love talking about all things, as you can probably tell, everything about geek, technology, digital, you know, entrepreneurship, leadership, you know, it's something that I'm constantly learning and I love to talk to more, brilliant minds in the world as well. So.
Yeah. Wow. No, this is good. This has truly been an honor for me to spend this time with you. Thank you so much. We'll make sure to put the show notes in the link below. But before I let you go, my mission statement and the reason I do everything that I do today is what I like to say, use your difference to make a difference. That's my foundation. So how do you, Ming, use your difference to make a difference?
My personal mission statement, and I'll share that with you, right, it's actually to make a positive impact in everyone I meet. Mm. So that's my personal mission statement. So to echo that, right, I am different. Everyone's different. I'm hoping that whoever I meet, I will be able to develop meaningful relationship or at least have meaningful conversations. So somehow what I say or what I do could have a positive impact on you as a person. As long as I'm doing that, I feel like I'm already making a difference to a person. And again, to your point, you know, making a difference, whether it's one person or 100 million people, you're still making a difference. So to me, my personal vision is I start with individual. So hopefully I can make a difference to as many people as I meet, and hence I would love to meet. My goal is to meet as many people as I can in my lifetime as well too. So.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Love it. Ah, this is good. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Ming, for spending time with us. I really, really do appreciate you being, being the communicator that you are and being the difference maker that you are. So thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Yeah. It has been great.
Pleasure is mine, sir. Pleasure is mine, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.